I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
Welcome to Political Breakfast from WABE. I'm Lisa Ram, here with Republican strategist Brian Robinson and Democratic strategist Theron Johnson. Welcome to you both.
It is a great sports week here in Georgia.
I know. Atlanta is going crazy, right? Go Braves.
And dogs.
We on fire. Yeah.
And the dogs.
Dogs,
right?
And Braves.
Yeah. Quite a week. Quite a week for us. This is the week of October 20th, and a lot going on in politics as well. The past few days, seeing and hearing a lot from Stacey Abrams. Abrams, you know, undoubtedly understands the power of the black vote. And she visited several churches in Virginia, as you know, on Sunday in support of Democratic gubernatorial candidate Terry McAuliffe. But nothing from her yet. We're getting closer and closer to 2022 with no announcement from her on her intentions here in this great state of Georgia. You two are the strategists. So what's the takeaway here, if there is one?
Well, y'all may have noticed, we had this discussion last week with Attorney General candidate Jen Jordan about this. The rumor going around that Stacey's not going to run and they're actually going to appoint somebody to be the nominee, essentially, or anoint, not appoint. And maybe it's Jen Jordan, maybe it's Michael Thurman, et cetera. And Jen sort of spun it like, it's just Republicans talking. And then y'all may have noticed we had some listeners tweeting at us going, no, Jen, I'm a Democrat, and we are very concerned about this. We are talking about it. And in all fairness, Theron said that last week, too, that this is something that's being discussed. Let me talk a little bit about what she said in Virginia. She made news because she said, in Georgia, I was not entitled to become governor. And it is a quote that clangs on your ears. It is so tone deaf. And this is not someone who doesn't know language, right? This is not someone who misspoke, not someone prone to malapropism. This is someone who was widely considered the smartest member of the General Assembly when she was there, someone who's a Yale Law School grad. She's brilliant. We all acknowledge that. She knows words. She chooses them carefully. Entitled was the wrong word to use. And this is very similar to the end of the 2018 campaign when she said things that may have cost her the election in those final days when she said that she implied that illegal immigrants should be able to vote, when she said people shouldn't have to work in hospitality and agriculture. This kind of rises to that level of being out of touch with the electorate. And I think we're going to hear this again and again. And I think you're going to be seeing Republicans talking about this all week.
I don't know. Theron, jump in here. The fight is pretty real. She was a woman, African-American. You know, maybe the choice of words were wrong, but I don't know. I kind of feel her pain.
Absolutely, Lisa, and so many women like you and her have been feeling this pain that we're talking about for decades in this country. I mean, women's rights has been a fight that, you know, we have witnessed for so many years, and not just in Georgia, but in this country. But to make this really sort of put in context for our listeners, you know, Terry McAuliffe, who I spent time with about 2 weeks ago when he was in Atlanta, is running to be governor of Virginia again. And so Stacey Abrams, Keisha Lance Bottoms, I mean, every notable Democrat was in Virginia this past weekend and campaigning for him, because this seat for Democrats is truly a battleground. He's running against a Republican who's got the support of Donald Trump. And while Terry McAuliffe's campaign is well-financed, he definitely needs to have a strong turnout amongst minority voters and the Democratic coalition. And what better person to actually come to your state to do just that? I think the word entitlement What she, you know, meant, and again, you know, I don't want to put words into Stacey Abrams' mouth. I mean, she definitely knows her politics better than anyone. But, you know, it clearly is a way for her to echo that there were some challenges, some voter irregularities, and she likes to say voter suppression tactics that were used in 2018 that prohibited her from being governor that are no longer in this, you know, that no longer in the state of Georgia that we believe that she and whomever runs for governor in 2022 won't have to face. You know, Brian took to Twitter very quickly to attack the former minority leader. And quite frankly, Lisa, I'm not hearing anybody in the Democratic side really talk about it. I mean, we know Stacey Abrams. We know what she stands for. And if we're going to quote her, let's quote her for her entire remarks. And she talked about how she wants to travel around the country, like states in states like Virginia, to make sure that what she experienced in Georgia around voting would never happen again. And she's doing that. That's why she was in Virginia. And then the last thing I'll say is this. I think that, you know, the Republicans are trying to interfere in Democratic politics and say, hey, she's not doing this in Georgia. And because she's not in Georgia more, does that mean that she's not running for governor? Look, I've been very clear on the show. I think we got to give her as much time as she needs. However, we are approaching a year away from the election. And if she wants to run for governor, I think she'll make that decision soon. But if she doesn't want to run for governor, I truly believe that there's maybe one or two or three qualified candidates out there, men and women, to step up to be the Democratic nominee.
Yeah, again, we're getting closer and closer to 2022. Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, as you noted, was also there and, you know, to support McAuliffe. But was she also there to raise her national profile? Does she have something else in the works, do you think?
I think the future is bright for the mayor. Again, I haven't spoken with her directly on what she plans to do. I suspect that she could definitely pursue a role that allows her to have a bigger national profile. She could stay here in Atlanta and do something more philanthropic. You know, we know she's going to be a professor over at the Clark Atlanta University, my alma mater. Or you know what, Lisa, she may just go make some money, which is nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that.
So we'll have to wait and see.
I don't think she's going to run again for anything else because she seems to hate being in elected office. She is not, I mean, she's made it pretty clear she has not really enjoyed this experience. And, you know, one thing on here on Political Breakfast for the last 4 years, I started even in the early days of her administration wondering why she didn't use the bully pulpit more, because she has talent to do it. We saw it, you know, very prominently last summer during the riots in Centennial Park or that protest, whatever. And we saw the talent, but she just never really used it. And she doesn't seem to like it that much. But let me tell you, the fact that we have these prominent Georgians going to Virginia to do base turnout efforts for the Democrats is very telling. And it's something that's important in Georgia and for our environment. I know we're not here to talk about the Virginia governor's race, but, you know, I was at a talk last week where Karl Rove said that he thinks that Youngkin, the Republican up there, is going to win in a very tight race. And that's interesting because Virginia is much more blue than Georgia. You know, of course, Georgia went blue this past election cycle. Virginia wasn't even close. It wasn't a battleground state. It was definitely going to go for Biden. And the fact that Republicans are now competitive there in this governor's race tells you how bad the environment is for statewide elected officials, for Democrats running for statewide office in Georgia next year. Independents who swung to Ossoff and Warnock and Biden are now abandoning Biden, and that's bad news for Democrats running in Georgia.
Oh, boy. I don't know. Charlie Bailey is our special guest today.
And welcome, Charlie. he can respond to that. He can respond to that.
How do you follow that intro? Charlie Bailey ran for attorney general in 2018 for the Democrats and lost, and now he's running again. And we want to welcome to Political Breakfast. Thank you so much for being gracious and taking time out for us today.
Well, of course. Great to be with y'all. And thank you, Lisa, for having me.
Well, respond to that. How bad is it to be a Democrat running for office in 2021-22?
Well, you know, people pay Brian a lot of money to spend for him. So, you know, that's what he just did. I'll tell you right now, anybody that says they know exactly how the elections are going next year is your first sign they're spinning you, or they have no idea what they're talking about. I mean, the reality is this is a coin flip state. It was a coin flip state in 2018 when I got 49%, the highest vote share of any down ballot statewide Democrat, but lost. 49 is not 50 plus one vote. And it was a coin flip state just on the other margin for both President Biden and Senators Ossoff and Warnock. And it'll be a coin flip state decided on the margins next year. That's the reality of politics in Georgia.
What if anything, will you do differently this time around?
I think we're going to have a lot more money than we did last time. Yeah. We raised about $1.2 million in 9 months last time, but between RAGA, the Republican Attorney General's Association, and Carr, they outspent us about 4.5 to 1. $3.3 million of that was spent in negative TV ads that my mother was not happy about. So we're gonna have more money this time. But the focus, I think one of the reasons that I got that 49%, y'all, and that highest, vote share of any down ballot statewide Democrat is because of the values that my campaign was based on and the issues that we were running on. I was in that race, and I am again in this race, the only prosecutor in the race, the only person that's stood in a courtroom and felt the gravity of asking a jury to convict somebody of murder or armed robbery or kidnapping, that has stood in a courtroom and on behalf of the people of Georgia dismissed the case. And when you're running for top prosecutor, it tends to matter whether you've done that before. So running on that, on the values of fairness and justice, building an organized crime division in the AG's office, building the civil rights division in the AG's office, which I campaigned on in 18, and I'm campaigning again now because they haven't been done. That is going to be the same, and those themes are going to be the same. So kind of the values and the themes, they're not changing because that work still needs to be done.
Well, Charlie, it's good to see you, my brother. We go all the way back to 2004 when you were at the University of Georgia. And I know you're a double dog, got your law degree from there. And Brian, it was funny. Charlie and I actually met as young Democrats, but then we actually competed against each other in the congressional race. He was working for Doug Haynes and I was working for John Barrow. Mm-hmm. But one thing I respect about Charlie, we were able to get together after that primary and we united, and we went on to pick up the number one Democratic seat in the country at that time. And when John Barrow beat Max Burns.
And Theron is not mentioning so that he whipped me in the primary. That's what it said. That's the other thing there.
Being modest there.
I wasn't going to bring that up, Charlie. I was going to be fair.
No, it's good. Yeah. And John's my friend, too. So that we got that one done.
So I'm just going to go right into a question that we've asked the other two guests that we've had on the show, and that is, sort of the thoughts, some of the challenges and some of the sort of, forecasting around Senate Bill 202. This is a hot topic for Georgia. We're caught up in, a lot of lawsuits right now. We have a special session coming up and a session coming up next year. And Attorney General Chris Carr stated that basically, if people wanted to change the law, they need to run for state representative or state senator and change it. But I want to get your perspective on Senate Bill 202 and kind of how we got into this situation. And more importantly, what is going to be some of the things we want to hear from you on the campaign regarding this Senate bill?
Let me add there, Charlie, just a second to add on to what Theron's saying. Jen Jordan was asked about this last week. The AG would have to defend the law. Whether you're Democrat or Republican, you got to defend the law. Mm-hmm. And Jen said she would because it was constitutional. She said she had problems with the bill, but it was constitutional. I want to add then that nuance in that context of Theron's question.
I disagree with you in the presumption there, the assumption that you have to defend the law regardless. Actually, the duty of the attorney general is to defend the Constitution, both the federal and state constitution, and those rights enshrined therein that the people of Georgia enjoy, and to protect the people of Georgia. So if a piece of legislation or an act of the governor or legislature or some corrupt bureaucrat somewhere infringes upon the rights of the people of Georgia, it's actually your duty to not defend it. And so I would, and I've said this publicly, I would not defend that law because I think it infringes on the voting rights of the people of Georgia as enshrined in Equal Protection Clause and the Voting Rights Act. And so I disagree with Jen as well on that. Now, it doesn't mean that every, that's a big law, as y'all know. It's got a whole lot of provisions in it. Not all of them are unconstitutional, but there are parts that are. And to Theron's point, this all this doesn't happen in a vacuum, which is very important in voting rights legislation and litigation. Democrats won a big election in November. They turned around and won two more in January. And absentee ballots, for instance, were used at a higher proportion by African Americans than other people, other citizens of Georgia. And so because, and look, I'm just going to be honest, this is about whose votes matter, okay? And because they say, well, it couldn't be the case that the people of Georgia has just decided that Republicans are way too right-wing and they're not down with it anymore. That can't be the case. And we shouldn't change our message. Let's make it harder for certain kind of people to vote, and then we can win these elections. Go. That is what drove this legislation, and everybody knows it. And I will draw a line right back to, because people say, well, it doesn't say in the law that black folks can't use drop boxes, so it's racially neutral. Well, I'll give an example from Jim Crow, as people like to cite that. One of the statutes, Jim Crow statutes, was used in a lot of southern states, was that if you could not vote unless your grandfather had voted, okay? Now, they didn't say you cannot vote unless your black grandfather had voted. They just said you couldn't vote unless your grandfather had voted. Well, coming out of slavery in the Civil War, black folks, grandpeople, they weren't voting. They could not vote. And so they used something that was racially neutral to disenfranchise people. And so when you make it harder for certain kinds of people to vote, you infringe on their constitutional right to vote. And I will oppose that every day that I'm attorney general.
You know, we discuss this a lot here on the show, as you could imagine, Charlie. And of course, you know, my thing is this, you're making an intent argument, which, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that is the intent of the law, but there is no intent part of the Voting Rights Act. It's got to be on outcomes. Does this reduce the number of African-American voters? And it won't, I promise. And we'll see the data next year. So the entire thesis is incorrect. The idea that black voters don't have ID or don't understand absentee balloting doesn't make any sense. Doesn't hold water. And they will vote at the same levels that they did in 2020 as far as percentage of the population. And in fact, black voters in Georgia turn out at higher levels traditionally in the last few decades than white Georgians do. And that's not going to change here.
One, I didn't say black folks didn't understand absentee balloting and didn't have IDs.
There's got to be something. You're making some argument about why it's going to be harder for black people to vote than for white people. And that doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, if black folks are utilizing a certain kind of voting at greater levels, which is what I said, so absentee balloting and drop boxes that were throughout metro Atlanta and in areas where you had more proportionally black voters, and then you take an act to make that harder, then it's going to disproportionately affect the people that are using it more. That's just kind of logic. And I will say this, there is a part of the VRA that still has an intent proportion or an intent element there, and that you can prove, and it's cited in DOJ's lawsuit currently pending in front of Judge Boulay. And I'll tell you this, Brian, bet me whether we'll find intent. There's something to litigation. I've been in criminal and civil litigation. You start sitting down and doing interviews, you start doing depositions with people, and it's a wonder what you might find out.
You mentioned earlier in your campaign in 2018 on your prosecuting background. And obviously, something you're going to use as a distinction between you and your Democratic opponent, too. You were in Paul Howard's DA office in Fulton County. I know you were gone. Do you agree with what he did last summer when he indicted the police officer in the Taser case and when he indicted Officer Roth in the Rayshard Brooks case?
Well, I thought, I will say that Fonnie Willis was also my boss. Before I was in the gang unit, I was in the trial division, and I was under Fonnie. And I was maybe the first person to endorse her in her primary against Paul because I thought it was time for Paul to go, and I thought Fonnie was a better choice. I thought Paul handled that incorrectly in that he rushed to make a decision that seemed to be political, and it turned out to seem kind of political because he was putting it in ads. He rushed to make a decision without having all the evidence, and in so doing, he conflicted his own office out. And then Fonnie couldn't even handle the case. And of course, you know, there was this back and forth where Carr didn't want to take it, which was unprecedented. And, you know, now it's finally got a prosecutor on it. But, you know, that is a difficult case. But Paul made it a lot worse by not waiting and getting all the facts and not injected it into a political campaign, which you're not supposed to do. And so I disagree with the way he handled that.
As part of your platform, you say that you're in favor of forming a civil rights division. How closely will you be watching them on Arbery trial with, you know, jury selection underway now for procedural value? And I say that because, in the very beginning, you had some tough criticism for your opponent, Attorney General Chris Carr, because his office did not take on the case, this emotionally charged case from the very start. So how closely will you be watching it now moving forward?
I'm watching it closely. I called the lead attorney last week, who I know is a friend, and wished her well and told her there's a whole lot of people that were standing with her. Across the state and across the country. So we'll be watching it closely, and you can never guess what juries are going to do. That's a bad bet to make in any circumstance, but I am hopeful that justice will be done in this case. And so the short answer is I'll be watching it closely, and I'm glad at least we've gotten to this point where there can be a day in court and hopefully justice done, because you can't bring back Ahmaud Arbery, but you can hold accountable the people that killed him. And I will say I am still critical of Carr and the way he handled this, and I think it showed both a lack of prioritization of civil rights and a lack of understanding of prosecution. And if I can for a moment, just the way the law in the state of Georgia works, when a DA recuses themselves, which is what happened when Jackie Johnson recused herself, I think 3 days after Ahmaud was murdered, when a DA recuses themselves by operation of law, that case becomes the attorney general's case. And instead of doing a serious investigation to see, because at that point they have the option of keeping the case, which I would have done, sending it to another DA or appointing a special just attorney pro tempore, a private attorney, just to handle that matter. But on the very same day Jackie Johnson recused herself and notified Carr of it, he appointed the person she recommended. Now, you don't have to be a prosecutor for a decade or two decades or whatever to know that is 101 bad prosecution. And because he did that, because he didn't even consider taking it himself, and that he did not even do a conflict check on the DA that he sent it to. He sent it to a DA who was conflicted. And but for that video being leaked, that 2.5 months later, which is one of the defendants leaked that thing, but for that, and all of us seeing it at one time, we may be still waiting to get justice for Mr. Arbery, and we wouldn't be talking about it right now.
Yeah, well, clearly the justice system is going to be on trial, too, with this. You know, you talk to African Americans in Brunswick and here and everywhere who are still especially disgusted with the system and how distrustful they are of the justice system. You hear that almost every day. As Attorney General, though, how, if elected, how would you work to change that perception?
Well, I think it starts with, I think that's why this building the Civil Rights Division is so important and something that's been a top part of my platform last time and this time, because the people of Georgia first got to understand that, you know, if they don't have a Fani Willis as their DA, all right, if they don't have somebody like that, that they know that the attorney general, if something goes wrong in their community, that they can go to their attorney general and they will try to make it right. And prosecutors are essential to trust in the community. And a good prosecutor can do wonders for that trust in the criminal justice system. And a bad prosecutor can have extremely detrimental effects. And so I do think the I will be, obviously, because it's my background, I will be out front and center on issues of criminal justice reform, public safety. And it's not going to be a light switch you just turn on. It's something you have to prioritize and spend a lot of time talking about, traveling the state so that people understand that they can come to you with issues that are happening in their communities.
Charlie, talk to us a little bit about, you know, this gang problem we have in Georgia. And I want you to sort of go beyond just gangs, right? Because, you know, the attorney general was on the podcast and he admitted that there was a study that was done recently that showed that out of the 159 counties in Georgia, there was reported either active or past gang activity in 157 of those counties. And he made a joke that said that the other two counties basically just lied. Those are his words, not mine. But Charlie, as a Democrat, talk to us about, if you are elected attorney general, how will you deal with the gang problems? But also talk about, you know, your plans, if any, to work with different municipalities, particularly in Atlanta and the metro area, because this podcast is not just a City of Atlanta podcast. I mean, we have listeners from all over the state, all over the country. But, you know, what would sort of be your role and what do you envision to work with local counties and municipalities to deal with the gang problems, but also to deal with other public safety problems that we have in the state?
Right. I appreciate that question, Theron. It comes down to, and this is why I talk about, again, building that organized crime division. You know, they've had an organized crime division in New York for almost a century. You know, we sit here as the Empire State of the South, the cradle of the Civil Rights Movement. We don't have an organized crime division in the office of the top prosecutor in the state of Georgia. And, you know, I've been that line attorney that's standing in court and the local DAs. It's all they can do to the police respond to a crime. They gather evidence. They interview folks. They get it to the DA. The DA makes a charging decision. They don't have the time to do the kind of long-term prospective investigations that it takes to break down these organized crime syndicates that are operating all over the state. This is not an Atlanta problem. This is an entire state of Georgia problem. And this is the effect of it, all right? You know, when I was a gang prosecutor in Fulton County, I sat in the living rooms of some of the victims of the violence that swirls around organized crime, but I also sat in the living rooms of some of the families of the defendants I was prosecuting and the witnesses that were on my cases. And those living rooms are just as broken, because these people that are driving this, that are making the money on this, I know we're being on air, I was about to cuss, so I'll pull it back, but they don't give a darn. They don't give a darn about these kids, all right? They pull in these kids and they grind them up. They are grist in the mill. And that path for those kids, with a rare exception, leads one of two ways: to the coffin or to prison. And so we have got to have, from a statewide level, an organized crime division that will go after the leaders of the organized crime syndicates. You start putting those people away, you frustrate their ability to move their money around. You frustrate their ability to move their money around. You frustrate their ability to go into those homes and go into our schools and take those young people out and ruining their lives too. And that's what the people of Georgia, I think, deserve out of their top prosecutor.
But Charlie, I appreciate your answer earlier on Paul Howard. I will later correct the record on the Ahmaud Arbery timeline. In fact, I have severe problems with your explanation of what happened there. Chris Carr is the reason why that case moved forward. When the video came out, he took action. And that's why all this is happening. Chris Carr led on this. But that's not my question. My question is this. You know, the Georgia Republican primary electorate is to the right of the general election electorate by a good bit. But the Georgia Democratic primary electorate is a good bit to the left of the general election electorate as well. You got a primary. Chris Carr is not your opponent in October of 2021. What is your argument to the liberal base of the Democratic Party for why you're a better selection than Jen Jordan?
Charlie, let me jump in for a second. I'm not going to let Brian get away with that.
Well, it is a good question.
It's the premise of the question. I believe that the Democratic Party, as someone who's elected more Democrats in this state than probably anyone that talks on radio that's not elected, is that we have a very unique base of voters that primarily reside in the metropolitan area, but also we have a lot of rural voters who are not just, you know, quote unquote liberal. I actually take offense to that because I do believe that we can't allow Republicans to continue to try to define us. Now, there are some people in our party that has hijacked the term progressive. They've taken it a little too far left, but the majority of voters who are going to vote in this primary in 2022 are not the radical liberals that you just tried to
I didn't say radical, but I may have been thinking it, but I didn't say it.
Well, first I'll say, understand and respect your perspective, Brian, in particular, because I know that you are a spokesman for Chris Carr, and you've been paid by his campaign.
All true.
And everybody's got to make a living, and that's fine. And I understand you want to defend him on the Arbery thing. We can have that discussion later. I stand by my comments. To your question about the primary, I'm talking about the same thing. My message isn't any different. My message is justice and fairness and safety and building a civil rights division and building an organized crime division. And is that message is the reason that folks like Fani Willis and Congresswoman Lucy McBath and Congressman Hank Johnson have endorsed me in this race and are backing me. And I'll just say, I think, you know, I think me and Theron maybe know our party maybe a little bit better than you. And I will say, Twitter ain't real life, all right? And Joe Biden proved that right in the last election. And so I don't change my message. My message is the same. My message, whether I'm talking back in Harris County, you know, at an event at my mother's farm, or you know, in Atlanta at a black church, or you know, in Athens at the home of the mayor, you know, giving a talk, my message is exactly the same. And it's the message to win the primary and win the general election.
Fighting corruption among legislators, state legislators, and other office holders is a part of your platform as well. Once in office, if elected, how would you tackle this concern in a way that is truly effective and not just rhetoric to get elected?
Well, I will start from this perspective. Chris Carr has been Attorney General for almost 5 years now. We don't have, and there's not been one indictment of any officials under the Gold Dome and involved in that part of the government. If the people of Georgia think that there's no corruption going on under the Gold Dome, okay, maybe I'm not their candidate. I don't think that's the case. And because you are, the top prosecutor in the state, you have statewide jurisdiction, and particularly over what happens with the state, just saying the words that you're going to be aggressive in investigating corruption are going to get people to think twice on taking some actions. And you got to be willing to do that and ruffle some feathers And listen, I know I'm critical of Carr. I know I was in 18 when I ran against him. I've met Chris, and he's a nice guy. But when you're more concerned about your party, which I listened to the interview y'all did, he seemed very concerned about be nice to Republicans and all that. Well, I think he said the truth. If that's your main concern, you're not going to be effective at going after corruption. If your main concern is the people of Georgia and protecting them and their tax dollars and making sure they're being spent in the right way, I think you would have indicted a state official by now. That's my perspective.
I'm sure there'll be a lot that Verify does for you to investigate. just kidding.
Well, I can stay on a lighter note. You know, personally, Charlie, is there anything else that you want our listeners to know about you? And again, I know that you have run before and you do have a primary challenger. But is there anything as we kind of move forward that you want the listeners to know?
You know, just that my career, I'll start further back than that. My life, which is raised by a liberal Bobby Kennedy Democratic mother, and who taught me about justice and fairness, and a career that was spent and has been spent, whether that was working for Governor Barnes at his law firm, as a organized crime and gang prosecutor at the Fulton County DA's office, as the Democratic Party's nominee for Attorney General in 2018, and now back in private practice at the firm founded by Bobby Lee Cook, those have been the touchstones of my career, is working for fairness and justice and trying to do what I can to provide for people more opportunity than their parents had, and so they can provide for their kids more opportunity than they had. So that's it. I'll go to work every day focused on those things when I'm Attorney General.
Our special guest today, Charlie Bailey, running for Attorney General. We appreciate you stopping by Political Breakfast.
Thank y'all so much for having me. I'll keep listening. Y'all just let me know when you want me back.
Thanks, Charlie. Right. Good to be with you.
All right. Take care.
Thank you, Charlie.
All right, we're going to take a brief break here. When we come back, Senator Warnock raising more and more money. We'll be right back after this.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Support for WABE's local coverage on maternal health and mortality comes from Georgia Health Initiative, whose mission is to inspire and promote collective action that advances health equity for all Georgians. Learn more at georgiahealthinitiative.org.
I want to welcome you back to Political Breakfast. Our special guest today was Charlie Bailey, a candidate for Attorney General. And you weren't quite finished with the conversation there, were you, Brian?
No, and first let me say thank you to Chris Carr, Jen Jordan, and Charlie Bailey for coming on the show. I think we've had three great AG candidate interviews here on the show that have really given you some insight into these candidates. One thing I want to add, Charlie made it sound like Chris hasn't done anything on public corruption. And right now, there are numerous DAs in the state that he has indicted, including, importantly, Jackie Johnson, the DA down in Brunswick, who deferred that case early on. Chris indicted her himself. She is a Republican. And he never said, I'm not going to indict Republicans because I have to be nice to Republicans. He said, you know, on the political side, I'm going to unite Republicans. That's a lot different than I'm not going to, you know, prosecute wrongdoing in the General Assembly. I think he's got a record on public corruption that he is happy to run on. So that was all I had to say about that, Lisa.
All right. Well, thank you. And quickly, Just want to note that Senator Warnock is raising some money out there with the finance reports in last week, I believe, that ended September 30th. He's garnered $9 million. And I don't know, what does that say to you about the race thus far?
Well, what it says to me, Lisa, is that I am one of those people who have actually given as much as I possibly can to Senator Warnock. And one thing about the senator is that he understands, Lisa and Brian, that he's got to have a war chest because he's the incumbent running to be reelected. He has a short window of time. And this is a very important seat to Georgia. But I would tell you, Senator Warnock is a international rock star. I mean, he is being able to raise a lot of money in Georgia, but you know, if you look at his disclosure, he's been able to really widen his donor base. And so I believe that anyone who, you know, wins the Republican primary and gets into a match with him, with all the money that he's going to have coupled with the other entities that will come together to support his reelection, he's going to be well-financed and well-positioned to be reelected.
There are some who say that Herschel Walker might be able to keep up. Any thoughts there, Brian?
Well, he had a 50-state donor base in this last quarter, over $3 million raised to get started. Let me tell you a little bit about the playing field and what Theron's talking about. What I was seeing earlier this year from different clients polling was, and this is different clients with different pollsters, I was consistently seeing that Raphael Warnock had the best favorable ratings of any statewide elected official in Georgia. Theron, have you seen that too? Is that what you've been seeing? And what's interesting, and I don't fully understand it, but like his numbers are always a few points better than John Ossoff's. And you know, they have pretty similar profiles, same voting record, that kind of stuff. Both are very, you know, public facing. Warnock's numbers are better. They're better than Brian Kemp's. They're better than Stacey Abrams's, which I think is of note. One thing I don't know, Theron and Lisa, is I have not seen polling in the last month. And we know that Biden's numbers have collapsed with independents. They've gone down dramatically nationwide. That's going to have some impact on Warnock. And so, you know, what you're seeing is Warnock preparing for an environment that's not going to be as favorable as it was in the last cycle, where you had, you know, the president of the United States basically telling Republicans their votes didn't count. And you know, a lot of things are going in Warnock's favor during that. But hey, given credit, that's a huge haul. That's a huge haul. Republicans have to keep up. And I think on the other part of the Republican side, you had, you know, Latham Sadler, who again topped $1 million. You had Agriculture Commissioner Gary Black raising a little less than $600,000. So that's the rest of the field. And so I think one of the questions on my side, Lisa, is there going to be somebody on the in the rest of the race, the Republican race, that emerges to take on Walker? You know, is it Latham Sadler? Is it Kelvin King? Is it Gary Black? You know, full disclosure, I do work with Latham Sadler. But so that's kind of the broader playing field that we're looking at right now.
Well, I think the one thing, Lisa, just to jump in for a few seconds, is I have seen polling recently where it's a confluence of I've seen polls where John Ossoff is higher in certain areas than Reverend Warnock. And then Stacey Abrams is high sometimes, and Senator Warnock can be a little higher, and depends on the area and depends on the questioning. But I think the one thing about Senator Warnock, which is so unique, is that he is running a very moderate Democratic campaign, which he will have to answer to some of the challenges that our president is having right now. I do believe, as Michael Thurman said, the guy's only been in office for like 10, 11 months, and he had to fight back a deadly pandemic. So by the time we get around to 2022, I think Biden will definitely be on a much better ground, you know, as far as like his approval rating. And then two, I think he'll come to this state and campaign for Senator Warnock. And that will be someone that the senator will welcome, because I do believe that the Biden coalition in Georgia, you heard me talk a lot about that during the campaign, is a real coalition of voters that is very diverse that ultimately will help the senator get reelected.
I think it's going to be difficult to have the argument that he's a moderate, given what's happening in Washington with the, you know, $3.5 trillion spending package that he supports, with the crisis at the border and how Democrats are responding to it. I think that moderate argument is going to be really hard to make. It was easier to make last year when he didn't have a record and he was able to do the Christmas tree lights and the puppy commercial. And, you know, he was able to be likable. And that's not going to be the situation he's facing next year.
Brian Robinson, Theron Johnson, thank you so much for the insight as always. Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist, communications consultant, and former deputy chief of staff for Governor Nathan Deal. Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist, public affairs and government consultant, and most recently a senior advisor to the Biden Georgia campaign. Thanks so much to you both. Christopher Alston is our producer. Lowell Brillante is our audio engineer. Everybody have a great week.
Let's pull it out, Braves.
Go Dawgs. Go Braves.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now plugged in, a WAB politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WAB politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.